The 1-900 Wrestling Program is brought to you, as always, by everybody who supports 1-900 Wrestling on Twitter. Not only is it the place where you can get exclusively the download links to all of our Melodica challenges, as well as the answer a little bit early, you also get access to our patron-only Discord. Ah, yes. That is where you can interact with the best wrestling fans on the internet live in real time. It ain't a crowded Facebook group. It ain't a sweaty Reddit thread. No, no, no. This is primo 1-900 Wrestling commentary. Go ahead and check it out. Become a patron today at patreon.com/1900wrestling. But enough of that. What do you say we just get this party started?
I want you to call me for all of wrestling's latest news and views. I've been involved in wrestling for 35 years, and nobody knows wrestling like me. Remember the number,
1-900 Wrestling!
Stupid idiots.
Oh, those stupid idiots are us, Jericho. This is 1-900 Wrestling, the one and only wrestling talk show that answers all of the internet's burning questions. My name is Justin Robert Young. Joining me, as always, is my partner in crime, Willie Dills Gregory. Willie, what's going on?
Not a lot, man. I'm glad to be doing this on a Wednesday because we missed Monday due to Memorial Day. So thank you for that, for being flexible.
Oh, yeah.
But also, you know, it gave me an extra couple days to allow some of what I experienced this weekend at Wrestle Circus here in Austin, Texas, to not only sink in, but to go viral. So I'm kind of glad that we actually spent a couple days, because I witnessed live,
yeah,
something that ended up being on Fox News and all over the place. So we'll talk about that later on in the show. I'm excited to get into all of what happened. Thank you, Trey Warren, for who also makes our Melodica themes, to for inviting me to come along. And it was great. Had a great time.
And also, Wrestle Circus has kind of become cause du jour, both positive and negative, in the internet wrestling community. We will talk all about that a little later. But first,
yeah, big week for Wrestle Circus.
Big
Wrestle.
Who knew? Yeah, no, Wrestle Circus has they got some swag. They got some mojo right now. Let's go ahead and move into the all of the topics of the week. These will also include Raw and SmackDown topics, which we never usually get into since we do this show on Monday. But because we had the extra day, because we had SmackDown and Raw, we give this week's in-between question sounder to Tyler Breeze.
Breeze, dirtbag.
The first question is, will the Drifter be on the WrestleMania card, true or false, Willie Dills Gregory? I say this because by his positioning on Raw, he's the new Braun Strowman. They brought out the jobber. They gave him a big entrance. They let him get booed out of the building, and then he destroyed this man who jobs.
Nice young gentleman. Yeah.
A fine local talent in the center of the ring. Will the
Drifter?
I gotta
say, man, are we saying, is this freeze or carry on? I think this is probably carry on about your business. Yeah, he's going to be WrestleMania in some fashion, unless he loses the nuclear heat that apparently turning the lights off and singing a terrible song in the middle of the ring is generating, because people friggin' hate that guy, and that's what you want out of a top heel, right? So. And his matches are fine. He's a totally serviceable wrestler. So he doesn't do anything super special out there, but he looks good.
Do you know who he reminds me of? And he also made his debut on NXT television this week. Is the Velveteen Dream, Patrick Clark, but the previous Patrick Clark experience, where it's two guys that are absolutely jacked to the gills. They look like a million bucks, and they move kind of like a hybrid of what the WWE muscle guy used to be versus this indie style that has kind of pervaded into all forms of wrestling at this point. That they're intensely agile. They're very athletic. And they've got these larger-than-life gimmicks. But I don't know whether they're connecting and I'm not responding to them because they're heels or maybe they haven't found where it's exactly gelled yet.
Well, I'll say this. For me, on TV, the Drifter has not really connected. In NXT, even now in Raw, I think that's a great word. Not connecting.
Yeah.
Is exactly what I would say. I don't really care that much. But when you watch the segments that are happening, it's very clear that the crowd is having a blast booing the hell out of him. He is such a – and this is one of the things that I think a lot of people kind of misunderstood about what was going on with Jinder.
Yeah.
Is, yeah, you've kind of in your own brain decided who and what he is, and then you don't realize that the reaction he's getting live at the event – I mean, this is what Vince McMahon talks about, right? He's like, I pay attention to the crowd.
Yeah.
He's getting a damn reaction, and so is Elias Sampson. So I don't see why you pull the plug on that if it's getting the reaction you want, if he's actually getting heel heat. Now we just got to see him in a bona fide Raw feud with somebody, right? And then we'll get to see if he's really got the chops. Yeah. And also, of course, where is he at in SummerSlam? He's definitely going to be somewhere in the SummerSlam card, right?
Who do you match him up with at SummerSlam?
Oh, geez. I have no friggin' idea. I mean, so they had him with Dean, right? As his first match.
I mean, that if they give him Dean at SummerSlam,
that is crazy.
A huge step up for the Drifter. That is Dean being used to get the Drifter over, right?
Pretty much, yeah. But I'm looking around that roster and I'm not sure who on Raw is right now fitting up with him, right? It looks like everybody else kind of has other stuff going on. So, yeah. I guess you have him, destroy some jobbers for a while, sing some songs, and then let somebody else's program finish.
Isn't that kind of insane? That also, you got to imagine if you're Curt Hawkins, you're like, really? The Drifter?
Yeah, I know, right? I'm just here getting my ass whooped by everybody.
I'm getting beaten like a dirty rug, and this dude is out here, you're just bringing in the string beans from the local indie fed?
Yeah, he's putting over all the new NXT guys. That is kind of weird. But look, the Drifter's getting a reaction, man. What do you want?
All right, two things that are amazing about the Drifter. One, we don't even know yet. Number one, there is just something universal from Mumbai to London to Kansas City, Missouri. If you are interrupting the show and singing a dumb song, you will get booed.
Oh, yeah.
He is great at that. Number two, somebody mentioned this in the chat room. We have yet to see him employ one of the most steady gimmicks in all of wrestling. And we have not seen it in the WWE in a very long time. That's the old El Kabong shot, that guitar right over the head. Always, as soon as he starts doing that, and that looms now over every match in the way that it did for old J-E-F-F. Then
Honky Tonk Man, right?
Honky Tonk Man, Jeff Jarrett, certainly. Anybody who has wished that they had been home with their baby tonight, that is somebody that that is something that I think can be a valuable narrative weight hanging over any match at any time.
So, I'm just curious. Who do you see him matching up with right now? Because if you look around Raw, there's not a lot of Goldust. Is now a heel, right?
Yeah.
And R-Truth, and so that's not really going to work. I guess if Darren Young were to come back, you could do something like that, a Darren Young face against an Elias Sampson.
I think you were on the right track with Dean. I think it's going to be somebody that we know, because they want to elevate him. If they're giving him jobbers, they want to elevate him, and that means that somebody that is already elevated will be wrestling him on a prominent position in a card. At some point, but
the faces on Raw are somewhat limited right now.
Well, they're all fighting each other.
Yeah, it's really weird, man. It's really weird.
You know?
Like, do you give him Finn Balor? Like, no, Finn's doing other stuff. It's weird. I'm looking through the roster. I'm just going, no, not this guy, not this guy. So
I'll tell you what. He's the way that you turn Bray face.
Yeah?
No.
Okay.
But I mean, I thought of it as a stupid idea. The more I think about it, it's still stupid, but it might be crazy enough to work. But if it's like,
sure.
If Bray's like, hey man, you know, I've been talking about how the devil has come to earth, but your music sucks, bro. And like the entire arena just goes absolutely crazy.
Sure. Sure.
All right.
I'm on board. Let's do it.
Breeze, dirtbag.
I'm going to combine these two questions into one. A lot of back and forth since we last had a conversation, a war of words in the public sphere between the Impact Wrestling ownership and Matt and Rebby Hardy on Twitter. Maneuvering, one might say, to curry public favor about who owns the Broken Brilliance trademark, the intellectual property. For that, I have never seen internet wrestling fans become so competent at contract law so quickly than when these contracts were published on the internet. Rebby Hardy, who has never been a shrinking violet on Twitter, certainly started tearing into this, threatening to release taped phone calls with TNA. Matt Hardy tamping it down a little bit more when it comes to the proper channels to fight these battles. Here's my question for you, Willie. How many days from now will you realize that we will never see Broken Matt Hardy again?
I'm never giving up hope on this one.
Never?
I'm holding on to this one. I still think it's a matter of time. Although now things are getting a little bit chippier again. I don't know if you saw... what's the guy from Anthem? Nordholm?
Old Nordholm.
Good old Nordholm.
Ed Nordholm.
Apparently sent a photocopy of the Hardy contract out to like dirt sheets.
Yep.
Trying to essentially say like, hey, this is why we're allowed to do what we're doing.
Yes.
Type of stuff. And then like a bunch of people are weighing in. You had the tweets from Bray Wyatt where he was talking about Matt Hardy. Then Matt Hardy's putting the gif of him laughing. There's teasing on that end. And then there's this guy trying to defend his position. And it just seems like if the rumor was true that they had come to some sort of agreement, I think there should have been some motion by now. So I think that whole they've come to an agreement thing.
Yeah,
it was maybe somebody jumped the gun on that news, right?
I don't think that the solution, and this is me, I'm going to turn myself into a contract and negotiation expert.
All right, let's all become contract lawyers.
Congratulations, we're all contract negotiation experts. I don't believe that the solution that the Hardys or the WWE wants is an agreement. I don't think that that's what they want. They want to either have Impact tell them that they are free and clear to use it, or for them to just start using it and then wonder whether or not Anthem/Impact will sue them for it. Because any agreement, quote unquote, that would come between the two parties would involve the WWE paying Impact money, either in a one-time lump sum or what I'm sure
or some
what
sort of
Anthem
a royalty
wants
type thing.
As a royalty kickback on all the merchandise that you know WWE will blow the doors off, right?
Yeah.
So I'm curious as to why this has kind of erupted now. I suspect it is because Anthem wants to blunt WWE just doing it. They want part of the public conversation to be, uh-oh, WWE's in trouble. Like, they don't own that IP. They want to put their stink on it. But even then, you wonder whether or not WWE just wants to do it. I'm sure they're thrilled with what the Hardys are selling right now. And I know that they can hear the chants and they can hear delete, delete, delete. But you want to know what? They really, really saw a lot of Bullet Club shirts out in the crowds. And they hired everybody from the Bullet Club. And then they didn't call them the Bullet Club.
No, no. And even like the Balor Club was never really a thing that actually happened.
No.
It was just, hey, let's make a shirt because we know people will buy this who know
exactly
what the Bullet Club is. But they didn't do anything about it on TV. They weren't like, hey, Balor Club, and, you know, make a big deal out of it. So the other thing, too, is how many of these Fate Reborn shirts or whatever are they selling right now, right? So if they're still selling a lot of those, why are they even concerned about turning him, like, getting, you know, we don't got to break the guy just yet. There's time here. We still got some Hardy Boys to soak out of our fan base before we really have to care. If things ever get stale with the Hardys, then maybe you see them accelerate this a little bit. Well, but at this point, if you're WWE, you're still printing money. They're still, like, coming out to huge face pops. It's just like, yeah, it's all of us smarks and nerds, our wrestling nerds, that just want this to happen so bad. And everybody else doesn't care, right?
And, you know, it's funny because the way that we look at WWE programming is most likely so different than how they look at their own programming, because they're looking at, you know, it's like you're a baseball fan, Willie. Like they're looking at how to eat innings. They gotta eat 3 hours every week on Raw with these characters from now until SummerSlam, and then SummerSlam until WrestleMania. So I'm sure even if they were chomping at the bit, they got their pinhead lawyers that are saying, absolutely, 100%, we see the loopholes in these contracts, and we're going to wait until the 11th hour, then make them an offer. If they take it, they take it. If they don't, we just run with it, and then we bleed them out because we can financially take the hit legally than they that we don't believe that they can. Then you'd still want to say, yeah, but not now. Let's do it a month so that angle is as hot as possible going into a major show like SummerSlam.
I think, honestly, too, you could even save it for, like, I don't know if you saw What Culture did a whole thing about how to book it, right? And they do these videos quite often. It was pretty interesting. But, yeah, you need to kind of reintroduce the story and tell it in a different way for the WWE audience, right? That you got to show him getting broken. It's got to be some sort of trauma. He suddenly starts changing the way he talks, all that kind of stuff. They haven't even had them cutting promos, by the way.
No.
Like, we're not even hearing Matt or Jeff talk, really. They're coming out and having matches. So you have to, like, retell the whole story. It's a slow burn. This is not going to be something that all of a sudden on a Raw, here comes broken Matt Hardy, because clearly the deal has been inked, right? Like, that's not how this is ever going to happen.
No.
And then another thing, too, if you're WWE and you look at the final deletion on YouTube, it still has only 1 million views, right? Now, granted, Impact Wrestling has less than 1 million subs to their YouTube channel.
So that is a tremendous overperformance of their subscriber base.
So, I mean, for Impact Wrestling's videos, it is a lot of views. But for WWE's videos, it's not that much, right?
Yeah.
So the Punjabi celebration got over 3 million in, like, a weekend.
Sure.
So, they're all probably saying, hey, man, stuff is working. We're fine. We don't have to do anything crazy. We don't have to succumb to the pressure that Anthem is trying to apply. Because I think if you're Anthem, too, you're going, hey, we got something on the WWE right now. Like, when is this going to happen again?
Sure.
Right? When are we, as Impact Wrestling, ever going to be able to hold something in front of WWE and say, hey, you want this? Yeah, you can't have it. You know, so they're going to milk it for what they can do. And it's working out for them. People are talking about them in a different way. Maybe people are checking out their programming because of it.
Here's all I'm saying. I have prepared myself to never see broken Matt Hardy again.
Yeah.
I've prepared.
You had like
myself.
a cold shower where you just cried.
I had a realization this week where I'm like, it's just not going to happen. It's going to be the thing that we always want. And maybe at some point 5 years from now, when nobody cares anymore, they'll do a version of it or something like that, or Matt will leave the WWE again and he'll bring it back on the indies, and it'll be very, very fun then. But right now, when I think we all understand that angle to be fresh and vibrant and fun and exciting, and you want to see it supercharged by the WWE and kind of take into this global level, I fear the ship has sailed, and I would love to be proven wrong.
Now, what if they went down this road and they claimed that it was like a parody?
I mean, they
and they were like,
if WWE wanted to get in those waters, which now that's dangerous because they could say, because now Impact could say, you knew that we had the rights to that. Mm-hmm. And now we should expect to be compensated for every T-shirt you sell, for every, you know, little broken thing. Right.
Yeah.
That's
dangerous. What if all of a sudden he's, you know, he just starts saying, I've been shattered. I'm so shattered. Like, and then it's like the same thing, but then you can kind of use it as, because parody is protected, right, in this country as
Now, yes, the idea that there could be another Matt Hardy maniac character.
Yeah.
That seems more likely. And by the way, I would not be upset if WWE just went to Matt Hardy and said, hey, let's craft a totally new character together. Because to Broken, he had a really good run in Ring of Honor as like the Matt Hardy brand, right? Like that he was this super arrogant WWE guy that was like just taking money from these indie feds. Like it was really good. He is a great mind who's reinvented himself two or three times now. So I wouldn't mind seeing a fourth.
Yeah, he's done a bunch of different stuff. So yeah, I don't think that the well is dry for Matt Hardy and his creativity. And there's plenty of guys at WWE who will be willing to sit with him and say, all right, well, we want it to be kind of silly. We want to go down that vein because clearly that worked out pretty well. So let's brainstorm some ideas. And maybe you take a little bit of what made Broken Matt Hardy so good, which was just the reverence and anything goes type of stuff. Start putting in all these weird things that don't, you know, Senior Benjamin and all that. Like, you just throw in anything that you want, as long as it's like the cohesiveness is just that he's willing to sell all of it as if it's, this is the world he lives in.
Sure.
Right. And he can do that clearly. So I'd be okay with that too. I don't really want them to just be the Hardys for the next 5 years though. You know?
I think, well, cause here's the other secret. Matt's a lot better than Jeff. and you need the Hardy Boys. Team Extreme is Jeff and Matt. Everything else they've done is Matt and Jeff, and that ages a lot better because they're not pretending to be 25. They can be 30 to 40 year old men. That also does a swanton at the end, but you love it because it's part of all this other gaga and nonsense.
Sure.
Breeze, dirtbag.
Will Finn Balor make it to SummerSlam healthy?
Yeah. Stop messing with his shoulder.
Do you worry about Finn Balor like I do? Because I look at the television and I'm like, oh no, Finn. I just hope every dive, every move. I'm like, oh, come on. Like, did all those? Did he? Is his bump card just worn out?
So, I don't think it's necessarily that. I think there's a couple of things. Like, I was watching some of the indie, we'll get to Wrestle Circus here in a second, but I was watching some of the indie wrestling this weekend, and the difference in body type between like a John Morrison, and a Sammy Guevara, right? Very vastly different.
Yes,
and you could like immediately tell that guy was in the WWE. This guy, maybe you get to Ring of Honor one day.
Sure.
You know, if everything goes right. Finn Balor is that body type of the more slight indie type wrestler, right? And then suddenly he's in the ring with these massive dudes. And I think he just got a little unlucky a couple of times. But I think if he manages that,
I really think
there's a difference between
the bumps. Is that possible with
the,
because the argument that's always made is the smaller guys have to do more.
Sure.
If you're going to be
because
in the
they're trying to compensate for the fact that they can't go out there and just fake punch for 20 minutes
exactly.
And everyone's going to go crazy. Yeah.
And just
you got to actually show something here.
you know, these, I mean, these guys who are...
What small guy can you remember who's just like a bruiser, right?
Yeah. I mean, because the other... these guys are as wide as a post office, and they, you know, throw a few fists and then do a flat back, and that's it. They can call it a day once they, you know, do whatever finisher they have. For Finn Balor, Finn Balor wants to be in the ring with Brock Lesnar. He has got to dance like the sugar plum fairy around him to make sure that it's impressive and exciting.
Yeah. No, and then the offense has to look realistic, so that means he's got to put a lot of impact behind it. He, you know, I mean, you can't convince me that Finn Balor just, you know, punched and kicked Brock Lesnar and was able to pin him, right?
Yeah.
He's going to have to fly off the top ropes, coup de grace, hits perfectly. That's how you're going to convince me that he could win those matches. So it's probably just – it's a thing these little guys have to deal with, and – you can kind of maybe see it a little bit with Hideo Itami as well. Had a couple of unfortunate things, but maybe these guys who have been fine their whole careers suddenly come to WWE and they're hurt all the time. Like, I think the level of body types they're dealing with is just different.
I also have a suspicion that there's a lot of guys, specifically in New Japan and working the indies, maybe not like the Ring of Honor guys, but
yeah,
that – announcing you have an injury in those professions, either when you're a total independent contractor working for yourself like you are in the indies, when guys have to set up GoFundMe campaigns when they blow out their shoulder,
yeah,
or New Japan where, you know,
they just keep wrestling.
I think that there's a serious question that we need to ask, yeah, as fans, if we want to pretend that we care about the safety and well-being of these guys, exactly how much New Japan cares about the safety of their performers.
I think there's a huge amount of truth to that, in that when they get to WWE and they actually get hurt, the doctors in WWE are like, hey, dude, no.
You got to come off the road. You got to come off the road and you got to rehab, and we're going to make sure that you rehab and you come back okay. I think there's a reason why, aside from that first match with Sami Zayn, Shinsuke Nakamura has not shown the same kind of style as he did before. And I suspect he will now that he's back on the main roster. But he didn't have to in NXT, and I don't blame him for not doing it, because apparently he was beaten to crap.
Yeah, no, you hear people on the internet talk about it, and they're like, oh, Shinsuke's like clearly doesn't care. He's just saving, you know, he's just going to do this when it's a big pay-per-view. And my argument is, yeah, dude, what the hell are you talking about? You the WWE schedule, we're not seeing all the house shows. We're not seeing all the other stuff they're doing. You're trying to tell me that these guys have to go out 4 nights a week, and you want them to do the brutal Sami Zayn Shinsuke match all 4 nights of that? No, come on. Settle down. Sit down, Marks. They need to save themselves.
Breeze, dirtbag.
We got this email from Aaron. Aaron writes, well, here, I'm going to ask you this, Willie. Do you believe this theory on why Bray Wyatt would be super cool with losing all the time? This is written in by Aaron. In a recent interview, Bray mentioned that he was a Christian. That's when I started to think, if he's playing the part of the devil as a Christian, he probably feels like his character ultimately should lose, but that's not it. He's also part of a wrestling family and traditional that the babyface should always come out on top and the heels get vanquished. Do you think that this is the reason, or this is a reason why? We don't know how Bray takes this kind of stuff personally. Do we think that this is the reason why Bray might justify to himself that he starts off like the eater of worlds and ends every feud counting the lights?
You know, it's funny. Like he ends the feud counting. Yeah, you're right. I mean, but he's got his fair number of wins, right? I mean,
not so much. If you were going to look at the career highlights of Bray Wyatt right now, it's Wyatt family versus the Shield, at which point you could say this is the future and be right. This is the future of this company, the six guys in this ring, right?
Yeah.
Him, I think he did a lot to really begin to turn the tide in the Roman's a bad wrestler conversation. His feud, specifically the one that ended in Hell in a Cell, was like really stiff and really violent, and I think was a very very good for both of them. And then, of course, him winning the world title at Elimination Chamber, which he then loses in fairly undistinguished fashion a month later.
Okay, I think this theory definitely holds water. I'm gonna go with that. I think
all right,
more
what,
though.
What do you think more, Christian
more,
or
more
wrestling
than the Christian
family?
Thing, I think it's the wrestling family thing. I feel like if you talked to Bray Wyatt and you were like, what are you more of, a Christian or a wrestler? I think he would say, yeah, I'm a wrestler more than I'm a Christian. You know, I mean, that's his family. That's, you know, he grew up with that. I'm looking at his record right now, and it is pretty bad.
Yeah.
In the WWE, he's got 182 wins. That win percentage is a blistering 29.98%.
Yeah.
Jesus. Not to take your Lord's name in vain, but Jesus Christ, Bray Wyatt. Win some matches.
I love the Christian theory. Mostly
the Christian
because,
theory is great. It
mostly
is,
because
is,
I want to see Bray Wyatt on the 700 Club. Like,
okay,
I just want to see him
Bray
doing
ever,
Christian media.
Ever turns, like, ever converts to face and then starts essentially preaching
what?
The other side of the aisle?
Like Judaism? He converts to Judaism?
No. I just said,
Mazel tov, my brothers!
I've been saved, man! You know what I mean? That kind of thing. I see the error of my ways.
Anybody else here got their plans for Seder, brother?
Yeah. Follow the Christian teachings, man. I mean, look, then all of a sudden he starts winning, you know, and he's doing it for Jesus. That would be
exactly.
I mean, that'd be quite the thing.
But the oil from that one lamp burned for 8 days, my brother.
Oh, God. I'm going to spin this little top, man. All right.
Dreidel, dreidel, dreidel. I made you out of clay, my brother. And when it's dry and ready, on dreidel I shall play.
Oh, my God. Oh, I want to see this now. I think we just worked ourselves into a shoot.
We worked ourselves into a shoot. All right, here we go. Let's get into our main event.
Breeze, dirtbag.
Oh my God, Jew Bray Wyatt is just my favorite. All right, you went to one of the hottest indie events. I would say easily the fastest growing indie federation in the country. Something that seemed to be kind of microwaved out of nowhere in the hamlet of Austin, Texas. It is Wrestle Circus, not only has it collected a who's who of major indie talent every single month, they have now entered into a little bit of controversy. We'll get to that in a second, but let's start with the show itself. Dills, had you ever been to a Wrestle Circus event?
No, this is the first one. You know, I've been living here in Austin for a year and 5 months, something like that. So it's kind of sad that I took this long to make it to the thing. But I will say they've been gaining a lot of momentum, right? When I first got here, it wasn't like Wrestle Circus was on the tip of everyone's tongue, right?
Yeah.
I would say that there's a lot of indie promotions that have kind of done, like Hood Slam. Obviously, there's been a lot of stuff there, but that's a little bit different. They do book some, you know, some like just indie talent to come, that touring indie talent to come, but they also have their own kind of thing going on.
Yeah.
Wrestle Circus does have that to an extent as well. They have like the sideshow belt, and they have like their women's championship was like the Lady of Wrestle Circus or something like that. But they weren't, to me, it wasn't like, oh, you gotta go see Wrestle Circus. Like, yeah, right when I got here, right? That wasn't happening yet. As time has gone on, you start to read things on R-Squared Circle where people are saying, hey, what's your favorite indie promotion? Oh, I really like Progress and Wrestle Circus and blah, blah, blah. And that name started to get thrown around more and more.
Yeah.
Then it turns out that our very own friend of the show, Trey Warren.
The Melodica
Master.
Going
to an event.
Yeah.
And he he goes to these all the time. And now that I've been to one, I will go to every single one from here on out. It was definitely worth the hype that I'd been hearing.
What is the
show.
Facility that they're in?
So it's 800 Congress Street. So it's actually, this is like right downtown. It's downtown Austin, literally like three blocks away from the Capitol building.
Oh, wow.
I'm sure you've seen this building. You know where the Paramount Theater and the State Theater is, where they do like comedy shows and they'll have like more independent movie screenings and stuff on Congress Street.
You know what I'm talking about? Let me try to get a view on this on a map, but I'm sure I have.
If you were standing on this corner, you would exactly know where we were.
Gotcha.
But right across the street is this building, kind of nondescript building, and I've seen them putting on comedy shows recently. They had like the Moon Tower comedy event here in Austin, and they had some shows there. I've seen during South by Southwest, there was a bunch of stuff going on in that building. So it's just an empty building that you just put whatever you want in there, right? You do your thing. So it's a great venue, and it's right there downtown. When I looked up the address, I was like, oh, it's that place? Okay. So I get there, and it's you know, the ring right in the middle, and there was about, I think they said like 500 people came.
Yeah.
Which... it felt like a lot of people, to be honest. I mean, the place felt pretty packed. And apparently they've been selling out now for a while. So it is gaining quite a bit of momentum.
Yeah, no, this is a hell of a location, I'll tell you what. And that is, this ain't no VFW hall out in the middle of nowhere. Like, you can get yourself a world-class little afternoon in, get a few Texas sodas in you, roll in.
Hotel.
Oh yeah, no, yeah. You just roll, yeah,
head on over.
Roll right out of the Driscoll and pour yourself into 800 Congress Avenue. Settle yourself in for some wrestling. That's a good afternoon.
Yeah, and now apparently too, they had their South by Southwest show was at a venue called Emo's here in Austin, which is like a gigantic music venue, which is actually pretty close to me. But that used to be on 6th Street, and then it built up its name, and then now it's moved over to Riverside. But it's, you know, like if they're filling out that place, I mean, this is moving beyond a high school gymnasium type of thing.
Sure.
Right?
Certainly indicative of the booming era of indie wrestling that we find ourselves in right now in 2017.
Oh, absolutely. I think you could say right now that indie wrestling is as hot as it's ever been. And that's fantastic. I mean, and maybe you could say like the NWA era where everybody was kind of an independent promotion. That was all under one umbrella. I wasn't around for that, obviously, but maybe that was comparable. But right now, with WWE being as prominent as it is, it's pretty impressive for indie wrestling to be kind of moving this direction. I'll just say highlights of the night for me. Before I get to some stuff, I am going to criticize a little bit here, though, too.
Okay.
I'm not just gonna heap just indiscriminate praise upon them.
Dills has got some pointed thoughts as well. Sure. But let's get the praise in first.
I think the best matches of the night, Joey Ryan versus the Boys, which I couldn't have been more excited about.
Yeah.
I'm a huge Dalton Castle fan. And
please go back to our audio diaries WrestleMania weekend of a legit a shoot hot Dills after Dalton Castle did not capitalize on his championship opportunity and the ensuing fallout. If you want to know how seriously Willie Dills takes Dalton Castle and the Boys,
I'll say I was actually like a little kid when John Cena loses or something.
Yes.
Right?
Oh no. It was everything else. There was a very measured, reasonable, oh, wow, look, the crowd's into this. This was the right time to do that. That was the wrong time to do that. As soon as Dalton Castle comes out, it is 8-year-old Dills, and as soon as he loses, it is an absolute poop show.
I was so sad. But this was great. I got to see the Boys come out, and then the Boys themselves had more Boys.
Really?
You know, of course, Joey Ryan came out, did his whole thing, touched my penis. Although here on the indies, touch my dick. There's a lot of F words and a lot of chants being used and stuff like that. It was a much more adult event here.
Sure.
But so they did that whole thing. Then they had some boys come out and they were going to do it for them because their actual boys didn't want to do it. And then they put on like a fairly decent match. You know, a couple of dong spots.
Yeah.
Somebody landed on his dong and then got knocked unconscious. Things like that. super fun match, super great match. I really enjoyed it. Obviously, like every time Joey Ryan comes out, it's just like everyone has a blast. The whole crowd is just having a ball. The other match that I thought was amazing was the John Morrison Keith Lee match. Obviously, people know who John Morrison is, Johnny Mundo in Lucha Underground.
Of course, yeah.
But he freaking looks like a million bucks. Everything he does is smooth as hell.
He might in fact be $1 million that was charmed to life by a kinky wizard.
He's an incredibly impressive wrestler. Like it was like Ricochet in a bigger body, right?
Yes. I mean, that's he's insane. The fact that he's not in WWE now is still a mind blowing concept. And obviously things are weird with those Lucha Underground contracts, but
he's like he's carrying a promotion really, like on his own, you know. And that's it's crazy to think if go back anybody and watch that season of NXT where he was the guy that didn't know how to talk or do anything, but he learned every move like instantly.
Yeah.
It was no problem as far as actually the physicality of wrestling. But he was just this vanilla milquetoast white guy with a bad haircut. And to see him like what he's become now is crazy.
Yeah.
Because now he's working heel perfectly. He's got every move in the book. He took the craziest bump, even though all it really was a power bomb. But Keith Lee, if you don't know, is this huge guy, local Texan, I guess, but moves really well for a big guy.
Oh, my. No, Keith Lee is having a moment in and of himself with the indie work. He was, in my mind, the standout star of the matches that I saw in WrestleMania weekend. Nobody else. I saw a match with him and Ricochet that blew my mind. He apparently had an even better one with Donovan Dijak that I still haven't seen. Keith Lee, for those of you who have never seen him, imagine Dusty Rhodes' body type with, you know, a Finn Balor level of
dexterity.
Yeah,
he's got like a luchador's moveset if he wants to. But then he's got all these power moves too, and he was super over, by the way, in the building.
And that's the thing. And he's somebody that's local to Texas. What I would say is Keith Lee versus Ricochet, I loved so much because it was the first time that I watched a Ricochet match, and it didn't look like Ricochet was slowing down. Like, he needed every inch of his athleticism to beat this larger guy that could move at his speed. And I think that's so important because especially indie matches and New Japan matches and everything, when you were dealing with these freak athletes like Ospreay and Ricochet and Johnny Mundo, you need to move at least at their speed. Otherwise, it does begin to look like a exhibition, you know?
Yeah, yeah. And that's the thing that people complain about is when it doesn't look like they're having a match. The Keith Lee, John Morrison, it looked like they were trying to legitimately
kill
out of each other. Yeah. Keith Lee hit him with a power bomb where John Morrison, I think he bounced, you know, 3 feet into the air after the bump, and it was insane. And then the main event, this main event, this is the thing. This is the dive controversy.
Here we go. We got it. We got it. We got it right here. Let's go ahead and take a look. For folks who have not seen it, this was the dive spot from Wrestle Circus this weekend in Austin, Texas.
Oh, shit. Yeah, so here you've got this is the main event of the night. It's a six-man tag. Sammy Guevara, let's see.
I think Shane Strickland.
Shane, yeah. And Mr. 450, Pentagon Jr., Rey Fénix, and Juventud Guerrera.
The juice!
So they get to the top, and they're all going to do a triple dive, and Sammy says, wait!
All right, here we go. This is him in his own words. So if you couldn't hear that, it was, wait, Randy Orton on Twitter. They're all standing on the top rope.
So they all decide, nope, we're not going to dive, we're not going to do it.
Fuck Randy Orton!
And then, the triple RKO.
Triple RKO, triple Randy Orton pose.
The Randy Orton stance, yes. So this was hot as hell in the room. That was over. That was the biggest pop of the night right there, was that. And it was fun, and it was great. It was super fun. But the whole match was just spot after spot after spot. I mean, they did a Canadian Destroyer spot where they did like five or six of those in a row. They did an insane moment where they built an entire stack of chairs a la Kevin Owens, and Sammy took the bump off the top. And it was an amazingly fun match. They all dove right into the when they dive at this show, which is not, you know, completely crazy for an indie show. They just move all the people out of the way and then dive like right to where everybody was sitting, creates a whole big mess, and everybody has to kind of figure out how to get back into their little spot there. But I had, you know, Sammy and a few of the guys like land directly in front of me. Right. It was awesome.
Great times.
Yeah, great, great time. So now let me go ahead and say that I really enjoyed this, but I get what people are saying because the crowd was, I don't know if the crowd even necessarily cares 100% of the time what's happening in the ring. They just want to be chanting the thing that they want to chant. And I think it's really only a few guys, but yeah, they know that they can yell a few things out and everybody will jump on board immediately.
Well,
right?
This is something that I'm sure you know very well because you were in a band, you were in the music industry. This sure. is the problem. When people understandably criticize fans for saying, oh, I liked them before they were cool, I loved their album before they signed to the major label.
Yeah.
Really what people are bitching about, the legitimate element of that is the experience I used to have is now no longer. So I used to like to go to a concert and know that everybody in the show either knew somebody that had heard the album or heard all the albums or had been to a few shows before. Now they're so much more popular. There's a bunch of looky-loos who just kind of saw one thing on the internet and now they want to be a part of it. And that's the sure. same thing with the popularity for indie wrestling now is there's a lot of stuff like that clip will go out on the internet and there's going to be a lot of people that were kind of half into wrestling that are going to say, you want to know what? I'm going to take time out of my weekend to go to a Wrestle Circus show. And part of it is to be a part of what I saw in that clip. And
yes.
those are the chants.
Yeah.
Those are cheering for the spots. Those are
like
yelling at the
wrestlers. Pounding on the ring itself, right? You could, for $40, you could be in the front row. And then after a spot like that, you can be right next to the ring pounding it.
Yeah,
you're part of the action, right? But I get that that's why people are doing it. But what I want to kind of point out here is it might be getting a little bit ridiculous, and I think that this might, and you know, it's not like I'm touring the country seeing indie wrestling shows.
Yeah.
Everywhere, but I'll just talk about this one show. It felt like people were just doing stuff they were just riling themselves up, right? And maybe like there was some alcohol involved. Probably there was some alcohol involved.
Might have been.
But there's a segment of the show where this heel is trying to cut a promo, right? It's a heel manager for who was it for? It was for Scorpion something. Trying to figure out what match that was for. I can't remember right now. But Scorpio Sky's manager is trying to cut a promo. And the one section of the crowd will not stop chanting, shut the F up, shut the yeah. F up, just over and over. And it got to the point where I was like, we get it, guys. Like,
yes.
Yeah, you hate this guy. You hate this heel. I got it. Can we just let him do the show, the part of the show that he's going to do now? Because they literally weren't going to stop, right? They had to even leave and come back out again to cut the promo because the promo was actually really important.
Yeah,
like Cody Rhodes is coming to Wrestle Circus.
Oh, gotcha.
And the whole point was he's cutting a promo to Cody Rhodes to set up this match, right?
Yeah.
But the crowd just like hijacked the whole segment. And at first it was funny, but then after a while it was like, dude, there's like five of you who are just like won't let this thing happen. And I don't think you all think that everyone's on board with this.
Yeah.
And we're all loving it that you won't let him talk. But I was sitting there like, I kind of want to stand up and say, like, I want to hear what he has to say. Like,
I mean, again, this is the refrain that I will say forever. It is my high-minded, smell-your-own-farts postmodern deconstruction of professional wrestling. Professional wrestling is not performance art. Professional wrestling is immersive theater, which means that you playing the role of somebody attending a sporting event where, for theatrical conceit, you're allowed to scream ridiculous things at the performers means that you have to allow interplay. And so if the person in the ring is feeding you and screaming, shut up, shut up, then yeah, keep doing that. That's them telling you, keep doing that, because that's what they want to do. If they're quiet and they're trying to wait you out, then...
Yeah,
full throat, allow yourself to peter out. You're part of the show.
Yes. So that part, that was, you know, that was one of the moments that I was just like, okay, guys, this is too much. But that, you know, and it almost did feel like, and I'm firmly on board. I am behind the indie thing, right? I think it's fantastic. But it was very clear to me, like, why people felt the need to make fun of what was happening. Because it almost did seem like a parody. It was almost like everybody read that tweet, the whole thing that started the Randy Orton stuff and everything. It was almost like people read that tweet, were like, yeah, well, I'm just going to do that now. Like, that's exactly what we're going to do. There was all these guys' chants. There was Fight Forever chants.
Yeah.
There was all that stuff going, and it was, like, right on cue, you know. It was pretty funny to watch, actually. But, it didn't really take away from the show in a huge way. But there were times where I was like, Jesus, man, like, settle down. And then there was another moment where when they're setting up the chair spot in the main event, at one point, one of the wrestlers he essentially like starts to call for people to hand him chairs.
Yeah.
And people literally start throwing chairs into the ring and all of them at all at once, just all like, no, 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 no. Like, this is not what we're asking for. But everybody was like so ready to be part of the show.
Because they
want to
do the ECW spot where everybody throws the chairs in the ring.
Sure. No, but immediately everybody just snapped their chair up from underneath them and was just like, okay, let's go, and was ready to throw it into the ring. It could have gotten really dangerous in a hurry. So glad that they were able to put the kibosh on that one. But it was just, you know, just sitting in the crowd, I was like, this is a fantastic show. But I see why people feel the need to shit on this product a little bit. I get it.
Well,
there's also the thing that it was a 4-hour show where every single match got 20 plus minutes.
Yeah.
There was a lot of matches that they could have done in 5 minutes.
And listen, they are a very new company. When I say that they're microwaved, I mean, there are promotions that are just now getting shine, like AIW and I think AAW. One of them's in Cleveland, one of them's in Chicago. I can never keep them straight. There are new promotions that are being started all the time by very well-regarded indie wrestlers that are doing their own hometown shows. Hood Slam, another one. If anybody's going to Hood Slam on Friday, come and see me. Your boy will be right there front and center, like he always is. That is a promotion that's continued to get more and more attention. Wrestle Circus has been around for 8 months. And that, I think, is what wound up getting them in trouble, because a phrase that we are fond of using on the NSFW and Night Attack show is Icarus-looking motherfuckers. It seems as if they might have flown a little too close to the sun this morning as they posted an Indiegogo looking to raise $200,000 to lease a new facility. How did you experience the news here?
Well, first of all, it's very clear that they do need a bigger place. The place is it was pretty much full. I mean, it was hard to get around in there. It was really hot. It was full of sweaty wrestling nerds, right?
Sure.
And so they definitely could use a bigger place. Now, that being said, I was a little surprised to see them go this route, because it seems like you should organically do this, right?
Yes.
But I get the feeling that they've grown so fast and so aggressively because they're spending a lot of money on talent. Like I don't think they're making a lot of money.
I mean, that was the biggest thing, that when I started seeing these cards, and I don't know. All right, this is, again, another one of my little pet projects that I'll never do because I'm doing a million things. But my data journalism project that I would love to dive into is, does indie wrestling make money? Especially as it's growing like this.
Yeah.
Because now would be the time that it would make money, and I'm not convinced that they do.
I don't think that they do, because I'm looking at this card these guys all came from other places. It's not viable that these wrestlers themselves didn't get paid. You have your main event is a six-man tag. You have
with like
multiple...
with a few of the hottest people,
yeah,
in the scene right now.
Yeah,
along...
they don't, I'm sure they're not. They don't come cheap. Now that being said, obviously the wrestlers are also they're all still out front after the show selling their shirts and stuff. It's not like these guys are getting, you know, thousands. They're not getting showered with money from Wrestle Circus. They're still trying to get by. But yeah, if you're getting John Morrison to come down and wrestle Keith Lee, how much do you think that costs at this point? I mean, that's not cheap, right? And you're talking like a guy like Joey Ryan, who's so hot right now, who is down at the low mid card of this whole event. I feel like they're spending a lot of money on the talent here, and the tickets are $25. I think for first row it's like $40.
Yeah, as
first row this was $50, but that's like, I don't know, 40 tickets total, right? And so, you know,
also,
I mean,
and
there's concessions and all that, so there's probably a decent amount of money being taken in. But
by the way, 1-900 Wrestling pro tip: always go for the front row. Always just treat yourself to the most expensive ticket at the indie show. You deserve it, and value for value. It's worth it. The extra 25, the double you spend on your ticket, you will get double, if not triple, the experience by being right
now,
next to everything.
Now, that being said, we had first row tickets apparently, but we were sitting in the second row, and it didn't matter. Like,
oh, sure. No, but I'm saying, and oftentimes the first row is always sold out, but
yeah,
it's fine.
Yeah, exactly. It's, I mean, when you're talking like 15 extra bucks.
Treat,
yeah,
that's what I'm saying. People are like, white people rich. It's 15 extra dollars. It's what you would wind up paying for a concert of a local band. Just pay that. Give them that money.
Yeah. But so, I mean, I think a lot of money came in. I think a lot of money was spent that evening. But I'm looking at the card and I'm thinking a lot that there's so much overhead here. To, you know, you got to think about all the stuff that they have, right?
So
the venue itself does not come cheap for having it for a night, right? A big building on Congress Street.
Yeah.
And then, of course, a ring that you got to set up. And then there's clearly a lot of employees. There was the fact that they were going out to an IPPV, which who knows what the buy rate is on that. But apparently they broadcast this one for free.
They did it for free for the RTs. I mean,
yeah.
All right, so let's take a look at this Indiegogo. This is the summary of their Indiegogo. Austin, Texas has proven to be one of the hottest cities for independent wrestling. However, we are constantly being threatened and bullied by venues that, quote, don't want to be associated with pro wrestling, end quote. This has caused promotions like Inspire Pro Wrestling to change venues several times. Additionally, Wrestle Circus has outgrown our venue at 800 Congress. By getting this new space, the independent wrestling scene in Austin, Texas will continue to flourish and we'll be able to allow even more fans entry to the building to enjoy our show. This campaign was started by Al and Lexi Lenhart, owners of Wrestle Circus, based on the feedback provided by many of our fans. Wrestle Circus started as a passion project for us, but has grown beyond that. Today, Wrestle Circus is a passion project for us, but more so, it's become a passion project for our fans, the amazing talent and the community we've built. By reaching our goal and getting into this new venue, we'll be able to add more quality wrestling to the Austin, Texas area, and we'll be able to deliver it in the most fan-friendly environment geared towards pro wrestling. They wanted to get the property, new chairs, a training facility that they would use for a wrestling school, professional ring lighting, a machine so they could print their own merch, venue space that they could lease out to other combat sports, bar and food prep installation, and all the accoutrement. This was shut down seemingly within hours after launching, after backlash, and the name of the campaign now is "This Order is Over, All Orders Refunded. Thank you to everyone who supported our campaign. We are working on our alternatives to achieve our goal."
Yeah, so I'm curious to know. I was looking at their Twitter feed, and I haven't really looked through all the tweets at them, but it looked like they actually did raise some money before they actually shut it down.
Yeah.
So, you know, there was a few people who are actually on on board.
I'm sure. Listen, they're a very popular brand right now, and again, they have come not to play off their Randy Orton spot, but from hashtag out of nowhere.
Yeah, yeah. So I mean, like, it's just it seems to me like maybe the Indiegogo thing was a little bit like again, maybe
Icarus looking
close,
motherfuckers.
Like you said. Yeah, I think they need to maybe slow things down a touch. It's probably like, you know, it's some guys who, like they said, passion project, and things are working out pretty well, and they're very excited about this, right? When the first thing in your life happens where things start to actually be successful, and I'm not saying this is the first thing in their life, but I've experienced this, like when we had like the MGA or like a band started to actually take off, you get really excited and you get big ideas.
Okay, so let me point to why this happened. Because I'm going to take a wild guess in saying that they are in what is called in business an investment phase. They are pouring a lot of money into setting up this brand, and now what they want to do is actually turn it into something that makes money. So take a look at what they get. Leasing the property, more capacity to sell tickets to their shows, more money. More wrestling shows, more money. Here's the big one. No independent wrestling company, including all the ones that you love, don't have schools. Schools make money when they are not running shows. That is a way to make money. Printing their own merchandise, making money. Leasing it to other combat sports places, making money. What they wanted to do was, on the back of crowdfunding, actually have Wrestle Circus make them money. A noble goal. A noble goal. But that's what this was, and I think that's why they wound up getting the backlash.
You have to be careful with that kind of stuff these days, because people have, more than ever, people have their radars up for, like, their bullshit meters up for crowdfunding stuff, right?
Yeah.
And, like, even when it's people just paying for content that they enjoy, people have their radars up for it. And you're right. Like, what they should really be doing, they could do all this stuff. They're probably going to have to go visit a bank and take out a loan. Right?
Sure.
And do it the old-fashioned way. Right?
Yeah.
And if they actually go and they have the capability and the know-how to get all those things that they listed up and running, then that would be a sound investment, right?
Yeah.
I mean, so it seems to me that maybe that's the route that they should go down and then continue to aggressively book talent and maybe figure out a price point on these tickets that's going to make sense, where they sell out, but they aren't like missing out on any actual revenue, right? I would say that's probably the direction they should move.
All I'm saying is, man, Wrestle Circus right now seems like it is on a very, very hot trajectory. And I wonder where they land.
I'm just excited to. I'm just going to start going to every show. I'm going to start seeing if I can, you know, get to know some of the people involved and everything like that. Because I'm also very curious. By the way, before we end the show, Sammy Guevara, I knew nothing about this guy.
Yeah,
I would say he was the gem that I discovered that night, and I love this guy, and he vlogs, so go check it out. This is the vlog. This is all stuff from that exact show that I went to. There he is eating the Torchy's tacos. He's got it's a small channel. I think it's like I can't remember exactly how many
damn near 5,000 subscribers here,
so he's just getting started. Go shoot him a follow or subscribe to his channel, everybody, and check him out. And check out these vlogs. They're pretty good. It's pretty cool to see, like, the behind the scenes and kind of what it goes into. I mean, he wrestled Saturday and Sunday, right, that weekend. So pretty fun. I'm glad I found out about this guy.
Absolutely well worth checking out.
And there's Keith Lee, by the way.
Yeah, you can see
Keith Lee the next night. By the way, this was at the Austin Sports Center, which is right down the street from my house, and I wasn't able to go because I had other stuff to do that night. But I did not realize they did independent promotions there as well.
Yeah, so is that Inspire?
It's on Woodward Street, like right – apparently Mike TV lives pretty close by as well.
Right around there. All right. Well, yeah. Apparently it's Dills' new best friend, Sammy Guevara. Go ahead and check it out. make sure that you let Sammy know that 1-900-WRESTLING has got
sent you. And just watch some of his videos, man. He's great. He's fantastic.
Good guy. Okay, well, here, let's get into our most popular segment that we have here on the show. It is our Melodica Challenge. Let's listen to last week's. Dills, were you able to get that one?
Oh, yeah. Come on. Come on, Pedro.
Pedro, the pride of Mexico, Alberto del Rio.
You know, I kind of miss when he had his own personal ring announcer, man. That was pretty fun, actually.
Oh, that was amazing. No, that was great. Yeah. You kidding me? Great, great angle. All right. Here we go. This is this week's.
Have we heard that one before?
I think we have, haven't we?
I think so, too.
Let's play it one more time.
I know who this is.
Unless there is some distinction or I think I know what it is and it is something else, then we'll have to figure that out. But you can find out. Trey Warren says we have not. I don't know, Trey.
Well, I know who it is.
All right.
I think.
We'll have to find out. If you are a patron, you find out today, fellows, if you head on over to patreon.com/1900wrestling, you will get the download link to the Trey Warren Melodica Challenge right there on the old Patreon. Dills, anything coming up this week?
Not a lot outside of just my normal streaming. Oh, actually, tomorrow, it was supposed to be tonight, but tonight is Wednesday and I have pool league on Wednesday night. So tomorrow we'll be doing a sealed money match against Nippy Papa, one of my personal Patreons, a billionaire, also a chapter leader of the Tallahassee MGA chapter. So if you want to come check that out, we're going to use the TempoStorm.com sealed tool. Where you open a bunch of packs, and then you have to build decks out of what you get in those packs. So it should be pretty fun. So come check it out tomorrow on my channel about probably at about 8:30 Central Time, something like that.
Nice.
Either way, I'll be streaming all night, so come check it out. It should be fun. And then, speaking of the Mediocre Golf Association, we just got some pub.
Yesterday, oh, yeah.
We were on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle.
I'll tell you what. I was super proud to see it.
Right? I didn't think they were putting it on the damn front page. I mean, I knew that they were doing a piece on us, but it was bottom, second fold, but
right there on the front. So did you have your mom pick up a couple copies?
I'm sure she did. I mean, I didn't tell her to or anything, but I'm sure she's probably already popped one in the mail and sent it over to me.
Oh, dude. So great. All right, everybody, he streams all night. Woo! Stream a little longer. That is at twitch.tv/WillyDills. You can find me, of course, twitch.tv/JustinRYoung, streaming every morning right here. Again, if you want to come down to Hood Slam, come on out this Friday. I'll be there front row. So check that out if you are in the Bay Area. I would highly recommend you pick up your tickets online as they have been selling out as well. All right. That about wraps it up for this edition of the 1-900 Wrestling Podcast. We will see you guys next week.
I want you to call me for all of wrestling's latest news and views. I've been involved in wrestling for 35 years, and nobody knows wrestling like me. Remember the number,
1-900 Wrestling.
Stupid idiots.
They call me Horror.
Is cooking.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Breeze, dirtbag.